Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Midday Show. Benigno and Roberts. Joe is off. I'm with you till 1. And then you will get JJ filling in for CMB. The curmudgeon Dove Kramer on the other side. Ernie Acosta doing a nice job today producing this radio program because he was able to produce maybe the best broadcaster in the business. And that, of course, is the great Ian Eagle. Ian, how the hell have you been?
You don't go with initials, Evan. You're going into JJ, filling in for CMB. Just make the plunge. Just go with ER.
Never going to happen. I like to make people happy, right? JJ calls himself JJ. CMB calls himself CMB. DA calls himself DA. You don't call yourself IE, but if you did, I'd call you IE. I'm a lover, you know? What can I tell you?
Yeah, in high school, I was known as MCINE. So if you want to call me that, just stick with it.
I'm sure you were wildly popular, too, doing that.
Yeah. It was a different time, Ev, ER. It was the 80s, and a lot of different stuff was going on. I had big hair, a bit of a fro. We don't have to get into
it. I can
this,
imagine but, that. I have so many questions for you. First of all, and I know Joe would ask you this question. Do you have the football schedule yet? Do you know yeah. when you're doing the Jets? When you're doing it? Do you know all this stuff?
I know some of the stuff. I don't know all this stuff, but it does look like I will do the Jets Monday night game on radio. That appears to be happening.
What is your reaction? What is your reaction to Boomer Esiason's big announcement? Made a very big announcement. In which he said he's leaving radio, scared the crap out of me. I don't know what he meant. And then he said he's leaving the Westwood One booth. You have worked with him. I think he thanked you. You've worked with him many times. Did you get emotional when you heard that announcement?
I did. Well, first of all, this affects me in a deep and emotional way because that was how I got to watch the Ranger games on Monday night or Thursday night. He would have it on right in front of him on a computer. And he would react in the moment to the point where if there was a Ranger goal, I thought I missed something on the football field. So it will affect certainly my following of the New York Rangers, but on a deeper level, and I love the guy. I love working with him. He's tremendous person, tremendous broadcaster. It almost feels like a eulogy. It should not. He's got a lot of jobs. I'm not worried about him. But from strictly a partner standpoint, he's one of the best. So a bummer, but I fully understand it. I also would see firsthand how ossified he was by the end of the game and then having to turn around and get back to do the morning show. So
yeah.
I think just for his life, this is going to be a really good thing. But Westwood is going to miss him.
I'm stunned he did this for so long. I mean, because I'm complaining during live reads about I only got a few hours of sleep because my son woke up in the middle of the night or the Mets played a West Coast game. This guy, and he did it for over a decade, which is incredible, never slept basically during the fall. So I agree with you. I don't think it's a eulogy. I think it's almost a celebration that he could actually sleep a little bit more.
It is. And Evan, there were times where we would get to the booth and he would have four of these five-hour energies lined up, ready to go.
That's great.
And I said to Boomer, I said, you realize that's not 20 hours of energy. you can't stack those. It's just the five. It just starts to blend together after you begin to just shoot them down like shots. So, I think for his well-being, this is a really good move to get back to some sense of normalcy. I think we know anyone that does morning radio, it's not quite normal,
right?
But it's going to be a new normal for him in the fall.
Sure.
Much better for his life.
Well, now, one of the reasons why you're great, as I continue to kiss you behind, but one of the reasons why you're great is you're so well prepared. Do you start the NFL prep now? I mean, we're a week away from training camp. I know you do a handful of preseason games usually for the Jets, but are you spending your days just studying depth charts yet?
It's funny you say that because I would say up until 3 years ago, that was the case. I just felt maybe because I got into this at a fairly young age, and I always felt like I had to prove myself, and I went above and beyond what I thought the prep was. And you realize that everybody preps. Everybody does their work. They just do it in different ways. Up until about 3 years ago, I would spend the summer doing exactly that. And then I think I finally realized, okay, I don't have to know the third string Sam linebacker for the Detroit Lions on June 26th. I can wait. It's okay. It's okay to start ramping back up late July, early August. And then when you get your assignments, obviously you really zone in and concentrate on the teams that you're covering. So I have decompressed a bit more the last 3 years, trying to create a little bit more balance. And I would say I've turned the battery off the last few years, and it's helped quite a bit.
You're saying you're resting on your laurels. You're basically done.
Yes, and finally, whatever. I've gotten to that stage of my life that I'm completely resting on my laurels, Evan, yes.
But you work your butt off, man. This has to be the quietest time for you, right? Where you at least have a chance to take a deep breath during the summer.
It was actually today was going to be the quietest time until I got the text from you.
I apologize.
You needed me to come on.
I ruined the whole thing. We are talking to the great Ian Eagle. Now, I'm going to tick off my fellow Net fans by doing this. My first basketball question to you is not going to be about the Nets. It's actually going to be about the Knicks, as weird as that is. And the reason I ask that is you do college basketball. Part of what makes you great is you do everything. Your impression, not the summer league, Kevin Knox, because I think Knicks fans are very excited about him, but what you saw in college from Knox and what you think he can be on the next level.
Yeah, I had him twice live, one game at Missouri, the other game at Florida, and he did not play well in either game. He was very passive in both of those games, to the point where I was actually a little bit underwhelmed because I had heard all about Kevin Knox. I had watched tape. And then to see him in person, may have had a bad day, maybe it was the road game, maybe just had some other factors involved, or, you know, randomly, you just don't get people at their best. So I'm judging off two times that I saw him in person, neither game where he stood out necessarily. What I saw watching him over the course of the season is a well-rounded player who still has room to grow. I certainly didn't think he was a finished product. I think he's the kind of player that we saw in the summer league, even though he's going against a bunch of guys that in 2 months could be playing in Zagreb if they're lucky. So we have to at least keep this in mind when we make assessments in the summer league. But you saw the making of a player that might be ready to blossom and take on the responsibility of fulfilling some potential. I certainly don't think he's reached the ceiling. There's a lot of room to grow. I was not that enamored by the pick when it came down, but I could see what the Knicks see in him, and then we saw glimpses of it in Vegas.
It's got to be difficult, and it's not to say that this is a great comparison, because it probably isn't, but Jason Tatum was good in his 1 year at Duke. Not saying he wasn't, but it felt as if he was better as an NBA player. He was better with the Boston Celtics. He shot the three a hell of a lot better.
No doubt.
Is it difficult kind of picturing a guy, especially guys this young, who are in different roles in college and they'll be in the NBA? I mean, Knox is going to have a bigger role in the NBA when you think about it. Is it difficult trying to figure out, all right, what is this guy at the next level when you're watching them play in what is such a different situation?
Oh, very much so. And that's why I think scouts are so valuable, and the ones that do it well and do it consistently well over time, where you can look at a scout's track record and see the players that they truly believed in. And on draft night that they stood up on a table in their respective organization's room and said, we have to take this guy. That to me is really what this is all about, talent evaluation, and then getting them into a system where you can develop them, getting them into a culture where they can be the best that they can be. But, you know, it's funny that you mentioned Tatum. I think there were criticisms of him over the course of his 1 year at Duke that he didn't take over games at times. I saw him twice live that year, and I was blown away. Now, it just so happened those two games, he made big shots. He showed you parts of his game that were so far mature than what his years would indicate. So I walked away from my experience seeing him live thinking, this guy should be the number one pick. when he wasn't taken number one, it was Markelle Fultz, who admittedly I did not see live. I had no Washington games. So a lot of it is just based on your own personal experience. That's why I hesitate with Kevin Knox. I didn't watch him 25 times.
Right.
I saw little bits and pieces. And then in the NCAA tournament, again, you saw glimpses, but I think you make a great point that this is an imperfect science, and that's why you try to look at the track record of GMs and director of player personnel and scouts to see what they've done over a 5, 7, 10, 12-year period to really make a judgment on how an individual can see talent.
Here's why I trust you, because right during the John Wall lottery, in which the Nets should have won the lottery, I mean, they lost 70 freaking games, I say to you very casually, look, if they finish second, I'll be happy. Give me Evan Turner. He's going to be a star, too. And you were very kind. You know, you didn't call me an idiot, but you said, Evan Turner's jump shot is quite flat. I don't think you're really Turner's not the guy. And I said, oh, yeah, well, what the hell does Ian know? So he watches all the games. And guess what? You know, Evan Turner's a fine NBA player. Don't get me wrong. He's had a nice career. He was not the guy I envisioned him. So now I trust you. Whatever you say about these college, I'm giving you the benefit of the doubt.
I'm going to live off that Evan Turner assessment. Now, again, that's a great example. I saw him three times that year for whatever reason. I had Ohio State, and I never walked away that impressed. I just never felt like this guy was going to be a star in the NBA. Now he was taken 2 overall, and you're right. If the Nets got 2 that year, I think most people, the consensus would have been, all right, you'll be fine. You got Evan Turner. You'll build around him. They ended up 3 with Derek Favors. They traded him to Utah for Darren Williams. And Derek Favors has made a nice career for himself.
Yeah, he's all right.
He's been a very solid power forward / backup center for the Jazz. He's made himself a bunch of money. He filled out physically. I had him in the NCAA tournament that year. One of the games, he was very good. The second round game, he was not. And it led to Paul Hewitt's demise with Georgia Tech because he was getting some big-time recruits and he just wasn't turning them into wins. This is such a difficult process. And certainly, you're such a big NBA guy. And it's amazing, by the way, that the NBA has subtly become basically an 11-month-a-year sport.
Oh, absolutely.
At this point.
Yeah.
It's amazing this transition has taken place over the last few years. Obviously, the draft has always been big, but now the free agent signing period has gone to a whole nother level. The Vegas Summer League has become a phenomenon in many ways. And even after the Summer League, which you thought would be a dead period for this league, every day there's a little something here, a little something there, a big trade, a free agent signing here, trade talk. It really is amazing to me. It's my 25th year covering the league. To see it at this height now is saying something, because I thought there was a time early in my career that it would never match the global popularity.
Right.
And I think it's bigger than it's ever been.
Well, here's a great example. I know you're probably secretly on Twitter. I'm sure you have burner accounts or whatever you decide to do there.
Multiple burner. My wife's burner account. I have a lot of things going on.
Well, and this works out well because it's CBS Sports. You'll like this. At CBS Sports tweeted something the other day that was hilarious. It was a fake conversation between two people. And the guy or gal starts the conversation by saying, hey, I was abducted by aliens in 2016.
I saw this.
Oh, you saw it. So for anyone listening, I missed 2 NBA seasons. So what's going on? And the person proceeds to explain everything from the last 2 years. And when you see it written down on a message, and I'll retweet this in a second, it's hilarious. It shows you how the landscape of this sport has changed in such a monstrous way. And my favorite part, I must admit, is at the end, the person says, well, considering all these changes, the Knicks must be pretty good. And the person says, no, not really. They still stink. Very well done. Very funny.
Yeah, it does show you that they've been really smart. I think Adam Silver has done such a phenomenal job. But beyond that, their players are engaged. They're engaging. And even on social media, it never quite crosses the line. So you get a little bit of that soap opera. You get a little bit of a young player tossing something out there and then another young player going back at him. But it never quite makes its way into that territory where it gets offensive.
Right.
So they seem to to have a really good understanding of the big picture right now, and it's working. And I think they're planting a lot of seeds with young fans too. That was the amazing part in Vegas. There were so many kids there. There are kids that are checking out these players, and they want to say, "I saw him when." You know, that's a big thing when you're a kid, when you get to look back on a memory and say that, "Oh, when I was 11, I saw this guy play, became a Hall of Famer."
Hey, all you need to know is that Kenneth Faried is as popular as Mike Trout, according to Q ratings.
Who knew that would set off this seismic reaction in Major League Baseball, where the Angels had to tweet something and Trout had to make a statement in regards to the commissioner, Rob Manfred. Yeah, we're in crazy times, no doubt.
Overall, the net offseason, and really the net offseason is about next offseason, let's be honest. Yeah. They have room for two max free agents. I am doing my best to not daydream about two superstars coming here because the odds are that's not going to happen. And you can use cap for other reasons, but I still admittedly dream about it. I think about Kawhi and Clay, and I say, oh, that'd be great. But overall, your thoughts on what Marks was able to do over the last month?
Yeah, I think their game plan has been executed exactly the way that they wanted. They're playing the long game here, so they wanted to improve the roster, which they've done. You look at the roster as currently constituted compared to the roster that they ended last season with, and they're better. Now, the key was not to give up any of their flexibility for 2019-2020. And you're right, it's not all about just going out and signing two max players. It's about having the ability to make some deals, and similar to what Toronto just did with Kawhi Leonard, maybe even take a chance on the big one, if possible. So I think they put themselves in a really good position, and they've done it their way. This was not going to happen overnight. They said that. Sean Marks was very clear about that from year one. This was not a quick fix. So after the Garnett and Pierce and Jason Terry and Pryor, Joe Johnson and Darren Williams, as all of that begins to fade into the background, you emerge now with a younger group, a team that they believe can play the system that Kenny Atkinson wants to play. A lot of three-pointers. Defensively and rebounding, they believe they're better than they were last year, and they should be, and they have to be. Anyone like you who watched the games knows that area, those two areas, had to improve. There were games that were winnable games that they just couldn't compete in those two areas. And you look up, you win 28 games in a season that easily could have been 35, 36 wins if you could address those two areas. And they've done that. I think they did everything they wanted to accomplish this offseason while keeping intact their plans for the future.
All right, let me contradict myself from a minute ago, because why not? When Kawhi comes to Brooklyn, what right. second superstar do you think will join him? Will it be Clay? Will it be Kyrie? What do you think?
Yeah, that's that's going to be interesting behind the scenes, the machinations, not just of the Nets' plans and plan A, B, C, and D, but the power that the players now have in this game. And Kawhi is working from a position of strength. And I know financially he would gain so much more by re-signing with Toronto. You're talking about a difference of $50 million.
Sure, yeah.
Anybody that you talk to that knows Kawhi, and I don't know how many people actually really know him, he's a mystery as a personality. The stoic nature, the fact that he just goes about his business quietly on the court, off the court, seems to be the same. I think he is in a position where he can pick and choose his spot. And if he believes that there's an opportunity in the Eastern Conference to make a serious mark with another player, who's to say that that's not the avenue he'll choose? Everybody just assumed, Evan, that Paul George was going to be a Laker.
And look what happened.
We jump on these narratives, and the reality is sometimes the players don't know yet. Oftentimes they don't know yet. Kyrie Irving does not know yet what he's going to do. Jimmy Butler does not know yet what he's going to do. And Kawhi Leonard does not know yet what he's going to do. But the job in the media is to supply all of the different potential storylines. And sometimes that gray area takes place between reality and supposition. And it's still a lot of supposition.
Lot of supposition. We're talking to Ian Eagle about everything. My reaction to the Kawhi trade for the Raptors was, this is great for them. I mean, it really is. There was something obviously rotten where they could not get over the hump against LeBron and out of the playoffs.
Agreed.
It's unfair that KC lost his job, but this is well worth the risk. Because let's say he does leave. Let's say he does go to L.A. or he goes to the Knicks or he goes to Brooklyn. You know what? Masai gets to do what he wanted to do 5 years ago anyway. Knock
Correct.
The whole thing down and rebuild. I love it from a Raptor perspective because I don't think the risk is there. What's the risk? You're going to rebuild? You're going to have to rebuild anyway.
Agree 100%. And I know there are hurt feelings. I understand that DeMar DeRozan was one of the good guys and re-signed with Toronto because he was comfortable there. He got big money, so let's put that in the equation as well, and he's still going to see every red cent of that money, and he's going to do it in San Antonio in a good system. He ended up in a really good spot. So once you get past the personal side of it, from a basketball standpoint, DeMar DeRozan is in a good position. From a basketball standpoint for Toronto, they're in an excellent position. They get to show Kawhi Leonard for what we think will be a season, but maybe less than that if they already have a clear picture that he's not going to re-sign with them, then maybe they have to make another maneuver. But you're 100% correct. They went as far as they could go, and they're around DeMar DeRozan every single day. They know more about him. They know what makes him tick than any of us combined. They've decided that it was time. And I can't fault him for that. I can't fault Masai Ujiri for making that move. To me, it's high reward, low risk.
Absolutely. We think alike. We think alike, which is unfortunate for you, I think, more than it is
except
me.
Except on Evan Turner. That's where we did not think alike.
That's true. I was thinking about this before, and maybe the answer is you're going to say, Evan, it doesn't affect me at all. Will the change in laws concerning gambling in any way affect the way you broadcast a game? And maybe it's not immediate, but do you look at that as something? Because now it's legal in Jersey, it's legal in Delaware. We'll see how the states respond to it. But now it's something where a lot of people watching, right? They're watching with an eye on legal gambling. Have you thought about it? And do you think it makes an impact immediately on what you do?
Yeah, it's a great question because in past years, I must admit, I did not get caught up in the money line. I did not get caught up in the spread. In fact, most of the time, I didn't want to know. I just wanted to focus on my game, my assignment. It was not something that we had talked about behind the scenes as part of the coverage. Al Michaels would slyly work it in, and Brent Musburger would work it in. And clearly, two giants in the industry had built up enough equity that they could do that without major repercussions, having some fun. And also probably because it did affect them on a personal level. It did not affect me on a personal level. Now, I think everything you just said is food for thought, and I may have to change the way I view it. And the probability is high that I need to know and write it on my board. What's the spread and some other numbers that connect to the game that you're covering? I believe it will be weaved in some fashion. I don't think it becomes the dominant topic of conversation, but you have to be aware of it. And certainly late in games, when a lot of money is at stake, you can't pretend it's not there. Right. It is. And there is rooting interest beyond just who wins and who loses, but how they win, how they lose, and how the numbers line up at the end of the game. My sense is yes, I will be much more alert to that now, given what's happening in our country, than prior years where I just thought it was a sidebar and I wasn't going to necessarily play to the audience.
As soon as you find out, because I can't imagine you've done this already, all right, because you got to relax, it's only July. Once you get the correct pronunciations of the two Nets that were drafted, I'm going to need a lesson. I'm going to need like a 10-minute master class on how to pronounce those guys' names, okay?
Yeah, I mean, just early, if we're just going to do some early pronunciation exercises, it's Jonon, so that's the first name.
All right.
Musa.
Oh,
Jonon, Musa. So you got that one, you got.
I got that.
And the other one, again, this is early. I want to talk to him. That's the big key, as you ask them specifically. It's Rodion Kurucs.
Kurucs.
But that could change.
Okay.
We leave that open. So years ago, you remember Todd McCullough
of
on
course.
The Nets.
Yeah.
Todd was a great guy. Really one of the nicest guys that ever put on a Net uniform. And I asked him beginning of the year, hey, just confirming, it's McCullough, right? He goes, yeah, McCullough. Great. And that was it. I went with that the whole year. They go to the finals that year, and they're playing the Lakers. And the night before game one, McCullough's going to go against Shaquille O'Neal. He comes to dinner with me and Bill Raftery and a bunch of our crew members, and he brings his dad. His dad comes to the dinner.
Right.
We go to an Italian restaurant, and I end up next to his dad. And nice Canadian fellow, he turns to me and says, I've got a bone to pick with you. I said, what's that? He said, it's McCulloch. I go, what? McCulloch? Since when? He goes, always. It's always been McCulloch. And I turned to Todd. I go, wait. I asked your son before the season how to pronounce his name. And then he said, oh, he doesn't know.
He doesn't know. Well, that's a problem.
Yeah. That's a problem.
You deserve no blame. If he doesn't know the pronunciation of his own last name, you're completely off
right.
the hook.
I think that may have spooked him for game one because
he caused us the NBA Finals.
It may have affected the outcome. He got freaked out by the pronunciation.
Yeah, it wasn't Shaq. It was the pronunciation.
Yeah,
well,
right.
It reminds me, it was weird. So when Frank Ntilikina first drafted by the Knicks, right, they asked him, how do you pronounce your name? And he said, Ntilikina. So I was like, right. Oh, okay. Then everybody starts calling him Ntilikina. Then I hear him again, and he says, yeah, Frank Ntilikina. So I'm like, what the heck happened on draft night? On draft, we still have the clip. I mean, I could play it and prove to you that Frank basically claimed his last name was pronounced one way, then all of a sudden he changes it. So I don't understand,
yep.
bro. I don't get it.
It's an announcer's nightmare, Evan.
Not fair.
It is.
It really isn't fair. But I appreciate it. You gave me a lot of time, and you're the best. You're the best.
All right, Ev, August 10th, Jets, Atlanta Falcons on CBS 2,
nice.
Preseason action. Be ready, be prepared. New scheme, new offensive mindset, more of a run-heavy system with Jeremy Bates.
Hold on, same horrible head coach, right, Ian? Same, you could change everything. I'm channeling my boy right now. Same terrible head coach, bro. Can you come? You know what? I'm going to do this for Ernie. So the game is August. What is it? August 11th? Is it Friday or Saturday, the game against Atlanta?
That's a great question. Why did I think it was August 10th? I might have to rearrange my schedule here.
This is for Ernie. What day that week are you coming on with us? Okay. Even though I'm not on that week, I'm on vacation. So forget it. You know what? I'm not booking
I'm
you.
Out.
Forget it. Yeah, whatever.
I'm out. Yeah, it is August 10th.
That's right.
Correct.
I'm excited. I'm excited for this season. I actually have last year. I thought they were going to go 1-15. I legitimately thought they had a chance to go 0-16. I was dead wrong about it. This year, I actually have higher expectations. I actually think that this team could be in some semblance of a playoff race. And obviously, the quarterback position is going to be incredibly dependent on who is starting right away. I don't want to see Josh McCown. The idea of Teddy Bridgewater being healthy is ideal, and Sam sitting for a year is ideal. But it's amazing what a year can do, man, because I actually feel a sense of hope, not just because of Darnold, but I feel better going into this football season than I did a year ago by a lot.
Oh, yeah. You have to feel much better about the quarterback room. Clearly, defensively, they have some playmakers now on that back end between Adams and May. They threw a lot of money at Tremaine Johnson. I think he wants to prove that he's worth it. They need Leonard Williams to take that next step. There's no doubt about that on the defensive side. Offensively, your concerns are going to be a tight end, which they seem to be year in and year out. The wide receiving core on paper, you think between Kearse and a healthy Anunua and Anderson and the injuries that Pryor's dealt with, can he be productive? And then at running back, Crowell was often the standout on some really poor Browns teams. Now put him in this competitive environment, and could that be a good combo with Bilal Powell? Offensive line, they've tinkered a little bit. Long is now in there, and he's going to be a leader of that group. There's still question marks, but there's progress. At least from a personnel standpoint,
sure.
I think there's progress.
It feels that way. By the way, one last thing. I know I was, we were ending it 5 minutes ago, and I keep dragging it on, or you keep dragging it on. I'm not sure which one.
That might have been me the last time.
Yeah, it may have been. There's a friend of mine, and it's so annoying, and I'm curious if you encounter this. Every 30 seconds, he's texting me with different Iron Eagle calls. Like, he started with Kendall Gill, and now Leon Johnson is gone. Do you get that a lot? Do you get people just randomly coming up to you saying, Aaron Facial. Like, do you get a lot of that stuff?
I get that one in particular. It's weird that that one resonated. That and Man's Jam seem to resonate. Why don't you just forward me those texts? I'd like to see them. Or just give them my number.
You know what? Oh, don't threaten that, because if I did that, it could change your life. He would annoy you every 30 seconds. Constantly.
I welcome it. I welcome it.
All right. I may do it, man. I mean, you'll be ticked off of me, but I may do it. Ian, you're the best, my friend.
All right. ER, have a great show. We'll talk soon.
DJ IE, I appreciate him.
See you, bud.
The great Ian Eagle. I actually think the best part was the McCullough story. That was hysterical. That was freaking funny. His dad tells him it's McCulloch. That's good. Ian is indeed the best. He really is.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.